All right, good afternoon. I think we'll get started. We still have some people joining the meeting. I understand that the commissioner had an unexpected conflict arise. So Stephanie, I think you'll start off, if that's okay with you.
Yes, that's great, Jen. Thank you very much. And you know, let me just extend the commissioner's apologies. As Jen was just describing it, it is a last minute conflict. So he had this time saved on his calendar to be part of this meeting and expected to, but something unexpected came up. But I'm glad to have the chance to be with you today, and we'll run through the call in, you know, the usual fashion. I do note, I don't know if this is the first call switching to the monthly schedule, but just to note that we're now on a monthly schedule, as I think the group agreed made sense for the time being. And also, has been our custom, we record these calls and then make them available on DEP's website after the fact so that people can you know, take advantage of the information if they're not able to join the call live. And so I should just introduce myself. Sorry, I'm Stephanie Cooper, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Policy and Planning at MassDEP. I know we have various DEP staff who are on the call today, and you will hear from them as we go through. I know we have Kathy Baskin, our Assistant Commissioner for Water Resources, and Yvette DePisa, who's the director of our drinking water program, and Damon Gutterman, senior analyst in the drinking water program in Boston, are on. And I expect we have representatives from our regional drinking water programs as well. And I know that Mike Maynard is here, and later in the call will be able to tell us the latest happenings at the licensing board. But I will start by saying, you know, we continue to follow the issue of budgets, both at the state level and the federal level, and certainly are very cognitive of the issues of lost revenues for the water sector. And we are hoping for federal relief. Although at this point, I think it's not, you know, we, as you all know, it's not exactly clear what is happening on the federal level and on what timeline. So, but we do continue to follow that. We know that the federal government is now operating on an overall continuing resolution. I believe it's through mid-December. And we know that, you know, the House budget had provided funding for the state revolving fund, for example, and the Senate has not, you know, has not taken that step yet. So we know that various organizations are advocating for that funding, including recently the Council of Infrastructure Financing, and we're continuing to keep a close eye on that. But all to say, we don't have any, you know, any breaking news to share with the group on in that regard. I believe we'll be hearing from Jane Downing today, and so we'll wait for her update for further federal news. But one thing I just wanted to note, which is related to the assistance the federal government has provided us, is that I'm sure many of you will recall the two rounds of distribution we did earlier in the summer for the cloth masks, the reusable cloth masks that the federal government made available to us. And we were so grateful to many of you who helped us sort of support this statewide logistics operation for the safe distribution in you know, close to a contactless fashion as we could put together. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that we have heard from our colleagues in New Hampshire that they have a surplus of masks. And I know that Yvette has put out a survey to sort of gauge level of interest, you know, to understand whether people have what they feel is a you know, a good enough inventory for the foreseeable future, or whether it would be helpful if we were able to take some of the masks that New Hampshire doesn't need. Would that be, you know, to be helpful to all of you? So I know some groups have responded, and I just wanted to mention it since we were all together here on this call. And would just note that if we did take advantage of whatever New Hampshire has to offer, we at DEP would want to, you know, pretty quickly set up a distribution process to get those masks into the hands of the utilities and operators. So I would just note that if we take advantage of that offer, we would be turning to some of our partners to look for some help in getting distribution done, you know, before the cold weather. So I just wanted to put that out there. I know Yvette has been in touch, but if anybody has any particular views about that or wanted to talk about it when we get into the discussion, would be interested to hear from you. You can also email Kathy Baskin, And I think she's putting her email in the chat so that people have that.
Stephanie, if I could, forgive me if you already did this, but we just need to remind people that the call is being recorded.
Yes. I think I said that, but let me say it again. The call is being recorded and we will post the recording of the call on our website. So it will be made publicly available for anyone who would like to have the information after the fact, but important to notify people that our discussion today is being recorded. That's helpful. And so with that, I think what I will do before I go through other DEP reports, I might see if Jane Downing of EPA Region 1 has anything that she'd like to report to the group today. And I will give her a moment. Give her a moment to unmute herself and see. And then after that, I think I will go to Mike Maynard to see what we have for the licensing board. So Jane, are you there and are you able to join us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, good. Sorry. I had a little bit of a snafu there. So I have three quick updates. The first is that starting last week on October 1st, EPA sent out a national survey to wastewater and drinking water utilities across the country. Totally, it was about 4,600 utilities. The purpose is to try to learn more, get more information from utilities about how they've been affected by COVID-19, both at the operational and financial standpoint. So that has been sent out. It is voluntary. We strongly encourage utilities to participate. And we looked at the list, and in Massachusetts, we're talking about 41 utilities. So hopefully you will make that happen. It's all about trying to support future planning and to convey the needs of the water sector to those at the national level. We think it only will take 45 to 90 minutes, but again, we hope that you take that very seriously. The second one is that October is Cybersecurity Month, and there's a couple of things to announce on that. The first is that there is a webinar that will be held tomorrow, October 7th, from 3 to 4:30. The title of it is rather long. It's called Building Security and Resilience to Cyber Threats, Disinformation and Other Hazards in the Water and Wastewater Sector. Again, it's tomorrow from 3 to 4:30. If you are interested in this, the best way to do it is to Google Water ISAC. It is being offered by a combination of EPA, Water ISAC, and I think a national association. This could be helpful for those utilities that need to start to develop, or perhaps have already started to develop, the risk and resilience assessments that were needed because of the AWIA requirements. And you all may remember that the deadline is coming up for those medium-sized systems, and that deadline is the end of December. And on cybersecurity, we also remind you that there is a checklist that was developed by EPA, as well as a pandemic checklist. So if you're looking for a series of activities that might be helpful to you all as you think about preparing for responding to cyber attacks, then you can check out EPA's cybersecurity incident action list. And the way to get that is epa.gov, waterutilityresponse/incident-action-checklist, both pandemic and cybersecurity. And finally, I would say, and I don't really have the link for this one, but on November 18th, we will be holding another webinar, and this one is about extreme weather events. It's called Building Resilience to Extreme Weather Events. NUIPIC is helping us with that, as well as some of the national associations. So look for more information on that. I have given that out to the states. And I think that is it for now, Stephanie. Thank you.
That's great. Those are some really helpful updates and resources. Thank you very much, Jane. One update that I meant to say in my opening here was that we have put on our website an updated version of the questions and answer document that we've been building together. So it's now updated with our latest answers to the questions and issues that have been raised on this call and that we've received through Jen and others outside the call. So take a look at that. If you haven't, and I know we'll talk about what issues may be on people's minds as we go through our discussion. So I think next, Michael Maynard, if you are on and able to unmute yourself, would appreciate hearing any updates that you have around licensing board issues. And we'll give you a moment.
Stephanie, unless he's calling in from a phone, I don't see that he is
okay.
In.
Thank you for telling me that. We expected him, but that, okay, that's all right. So we'll come back. If there are licensing board issues that people have questions about, we can always follow up and get people information if the rest of us who are here don't have information. So I think with that, Jen, I would suggest that we just go to questions, if that works for you.
Yeah, that's fine. So we had one question come in, and it had been covered in a previous meeting, but I think it's worth repeating since there are still questions about how reports get to DEP and the ability maybe for DEP to put drop boxes. So if you
Yes, yeah. So I'm going to start, and then I think Damon may have more to say about this, but I think, you know, one thing is, you know, for various reasons, we're not able to put drop boxes. You know, some of it has to do with security and the way the properties are set up. But what we, what I think we allow is the ability to email something, and then it sort of counts for meeting a particular deadline where you can submit it through EDP, and then we say we've gotten it as of the 10th of the month or whenever it's due. And then if the mail comes in due course, you don't have to worry about having met the deadline. But let me see if Damon can unmute himself and elaborate on this, because I know different versions of this question have come in, and I can appreciate that it's causing people some challenges. So I want to make sure we're giving you the full answer.
Sure, this is Damon. So the regulations require that you report to us, you know, within that 10-day window, but we've always interpreted that to include postmarked by that date. So the issue of the offices not being open on the weekends, and that's not a new thing, really is a historic problem for us. But if the mail is received on Monday and the proper postmark is there, you're on time. As Stephanie mentioned, though, during the pandemic, we have allowed for emailing so that the department can operate on those reports faster than maybe a slower mail service is be able to deliver it to us. But again, postmarking is perfectly fine to meet that 10-day requirement.
Great. Thank you, Damon. All right. So Jen, should we turn to open things up or?
Do we want to see, I did see a couple more folks join. So I don't know if Michael Maynard is now on the line.
Good. Okay, so Michael, we're checking to see if you've logged in. Mike Maynard, seeing if you're here and can, if you are, can unmute to give us the latest on the licensing board.
I don't see his phone number in the list of phone numbers.
So we may check back because we were expecting him, but don't want to hold things up.
Hi, everyone. This is Yvette. Michael is having problems getting on. He will be on shortly. I will put it in the chat box when he gets his.
Okay.
Thanks, Yvette.
That's great. Thank you, Yvette.
Okay, so a follow-up to Jane's item about the survey. Lynn wants to know if the survey was sent from US EPA or the US Census Bureau.
Jane, can you help?
Yeah, I believe it was US EPA, but if anybody has any problems, they can email me, downing.jane@epa.gov. But remember, it's not for every utility. It's for 41 utilities in Massachusetts. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. So that's the only question we have in via chat, but folks are free to either put their question in chat, email me at jpeterson@masswaterworks.org, or if you are unable to do either of those, you can unmute yourself. If you're on the phone, that is *6 to unmute yourself. So why don't we open it up if there are any questions from anyone on the phone who's unable to do chat.
That's great, thank you. And we'll obviously give people a minute to either unmute themselves or gather their thoughts.
All right. I'm not seeing anything coming in. Up here, Michael is just about to be admitted here, so we will turn it over to Michael Maynard as he comes in.
All right, his valiant attempt to overcome technological difficulties to join us today.
Michael, okay, you are unmuted.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can hear you clearly.
Okay,
thank you.
Fantastic. Sorry about that. The network seemed to go down. Michael Maynard from the Mass DEP and the Board of Certification. I just had a couple of updates. The board processed about 43 applications last month, which was a number of them were older ones. So we're kind of working our way through some of the older applications that were held up. We have received one TEC, which just received DPL approval, and I'll be processing that tomorrow. And just so everyone knows, the applications are submitted to DPL. So DPL has to have everything go through an administrative review before the board can review it. So I know I get a number of calls and there's some confusion as to how the process goes, but DPL is the office of record and they issue the license. The board simply sets policy and reviews the education experience once we receive the packages from DPL. So a number of questions come in and please continue to send them to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov with a CC to me, michael.maynard@mass.gov. And that helps DPL get the issue, and then I can follow up with DPL, and that seems to be working fairly well. The other issue is that we are in the middle, we're on the late stages of reviewing Chapter 230, CMR 236, which are the regulations for DPL and the board. Those will be coming out. We're doing some final edits on those, and those will be going through the internal review process at DPL, and then we will have public hearings on those where people will have the opportunity to comment on that. We're also reviewed the statute with DPL, and we had a few changes on that, and that will be coming out as well. Also, one of the things that holds up a number of applications, I'm sorry to do all this administrative review, but one of the things that holds up are the CORI and the SORPS, which is the sexual offender registry check and the CORI check. So when you submit your application, please to make sure that you have your CORI form signed and validated, and then that will make it for an easier review by DPL. I think that is about it from the Board of Certification. Thank you. Any questions? Just let me know.
Thanks a lot, Mike. That's all really helpful. And so I'm sure DPL will, you know, publicize those regulations when they come out for draft, but we will also do that and make sure that people know the comment period and what the opportunities are. I assume there'll be virtual public hearings, but we'll be sure to circulate that information once it's finalized.
So I do see Paul Furland has unmuted. Paul, do you have a question?
Yeah, just a quick one. Do we know how far DPL is backed up on the review of the certifications?
Yeah, Paul, I had mentioned we've been cleaning out some of the, there's been some turnover, so we had cleaned out, but we continue to clean out some of the old cases that may have had issues, had been incomplete applications. But I think we're about 45 days out would be, I would say between 30 and 60 days out would be my best guess. Like I just got an inquiry. Okay. That's about it. I'd say between 30 and 60.
No, perfect.
Ideally. Oh, that's it.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. That is.
Okay, perfect.
And we're trying to shorten that. I mean, I'd like to have it be a 30-day turnaround because I know the board knows how important the licenses are, particularly in this time. So we're trying to get it to 30 days, and we're going to be working towards that number. Thank you.
And, Michael, just another push that people should be submitting their applications electronically for quicker review because – if it comes in paper, it has to sort of make its way through that administrative process, correct?
That's correct, Jen. And when you do submit your applications electronically, please, you can fill out the hard copy, a template to go by. And any of the documentation that you need, like your education, your transcripts, a letter from the personnel department, a letter, a job description. You can include that as an attachment, and it's much easier. We've improved that where we're turning those around much faster. It makes it much, much easier. And that also goes for reciprocity applications as well.
Michael, I do have a question about the TEC. Now, normally, I think there's a 6-month expiration on the TEC. Is DPL holding to that, or is the TEC good for the length of the COVID state of emergency?
We have not discussed that yet, Jen, but I'll put that on the agenda for the next meeting. But it was when we started processing these, we were at 6 months. So I will bring that up for discussion at the next board meeting.
Okay, so as it stands right now, they're good for 6 months and then more to come if the board discusses anything different.
Right. What I could possibly see is an extension on that 6 months, or a provisional extension, which would be another 6 months. So I'll bring that up for discussion at the next board meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Paul, did you have another question?
Yeah, so just one comment I wanted to say. I just wanted to thank the board and DEP for allowing online classes for a lot of the for the licensure. I'm sure had board approval as well as other people involved to get that approved. Through this time, I think that's going to be a great help to continue to get fresh people into the cycle to get them certified. So
yeah. And the big push from that, I have to, give credit where credit is due, has been from Mass Waterworks, New England Waterworks, and Bristol Community College. They've taken all their prerequisite courses to take the exams and put those online. And they've done a really masterful job at doing that. And it's improving each and every week. And we're also seeing more and more applications for training contact hours as well. But, and this is the time if some of your operators need to, get a new license or take a prerequisite course to sit for the exam, now is a really good time because there aren't that many training courses out there that the board has approved traditionally, but they do have the prerequisite courses, which are offered again by Mass Waterworks, New England Waterworks, and Bristol Community College in Sacramento State. So they get TCHs for those courses, and it also makes them eligible to upgrade or take an additional exam. So I think it's a good time if you can to follow that route. Thank you.
That's great. That's all really helpful and impressive, how, you know, the whole program has pivoted to online successfully.
I will, however, say that for most of us, the classes have already started and there are attendance requirements. So that ability to jump in right now is limited. I don't think, at least for Mass Waterworks, we're about 3 weeks in. So you can only miss two classes per the board certification. So for the prerequisite requirements, I think we're subscribed at this point.
So the time would be for January. I think the cycle would begin in January. So again, we're in a 2-year cycle. This would be 9 months into a 2-year cycle. So for those prerequisite courses, you're going to be offering them in January, I would expect. So start looking down the road.
Definitely look towards the spring of 2021. I think we'll all be starting to advertise those come, you know, early December, likely. So. And we did have to turn people away this time. So if you are interested in taking those courses, it's best to get in early. You can always sort of back out if need be, but to hold your spot, you definitely want to register as soon as you possibly can.
And one of the things that to also mention is the associations have really improved the content of those courses. You know, they're not the static, you know, stand in front of the course, traditional classes. They're pulling in videos, they're pulling in animation, they're pulling in, you know, special guests to talk. So it's really changed, I think, the curriculum and the delivery of the curriculum, and it's been much improved. People seem to like it more, and it offers it's more responsive to the needs of the regulations in the regulated community. So again, the associations have done a really good job on that.
Aside from the prerequisite courses, Kirsten King is reminding folks that New England Waterworks is offering multiple open enrollment 3-hour courses as well online, and they've started their backflow courses in person as well as on a reduced attendance basis. So if you are in need of training, definitely take a look at those offerings. I'm not seeing any more questions in the chat or via email. Last opportunity if someone's on the phone and wants to unmute, *6. Okay, so I will be following up. We'll send out the recording, and I'll also send out a link to DEP's updated FAQ to the Mass Waterworks members so that they have that. I'm sure DEP will be doing that in their biweekly update to the water systems as well, which I think should be this Friday, if I'm right on my timing. Our next call is scheduled for November 3rd, so we're going on the monthly basis now, so the first Tuesday of the month, so that would be November 3rd. I will just say, not COVID related, we do have a drought management task force meeting tomorrow. And so we'll be looking at the current conditions for the drought. I've gotten some good feedback from our members today about the impacts that they are seeing across the Commonwealth, or some areas definitely seeing it more than others. So I want to thank people for their input. And if anybody has input on the drought that they want to send to me, you can feel free to email that to me. So with that, Stephanie, do you have any final remarks?
Well, I say thank you very much for taking the time. We really do find it very helpful to be able to stay connected with all of you. And we'll be following up. We had a couple of issues that we said we were going to check on. Jen, as you just alluded to, we have our updated frequently asked questions, and we'll be sending that around through our networks too, so people know that that's available. And if issues come up between these calls, of course, you can reach out to us through Jen, reach out to our regional staff, or to Kathy Baskin as well, if there are other issues that are coming up that we can assist with. And thank you to Jen, as always, for organizing and convening these calls.
Well, happy to do so, and really appreciate both DEP and EPA's participation in the calls. I think it's been very helpful to keep everyone informed and on the same page. And absolutely, certainly we don't see any end in sight right now to the COVID emergency. So we will continue to do what we can to get information out to folks. So with that, thank you all for attending, and we will talk next on November 3rd. Take care, everyone.
Have a good afternoon, everyone. Thank you.